Hello, my name is Roger Watson and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing, and welcome to the JAN podcast. These occasional podcasts will be a miscellany of my reflections on working as an Editor-in-Chief, some hot topics in academic publishing, and occasional contributions from guest editors. This is the JAN podcast of 3rd of October 2016. This year, 2016, the 24th to the 30th of October, is Open Access Week, and this year's theme is Open in Action. In this podcast, I'm going to look ahead to that week, and I'm going to do that by answering some questions on Open Access which have come in to the Wiley office. At the end of the podcast, stay online, because we're going to play again another podcast from several months ago on the topic of predatory publishers, which is very much related to the topic of Open Access. Now, I've been asked about what quick and simple steps people can take to make their work available in open access. Well, the quickest step to making your work available open access is to pay to make it open access by using one of the Creative Commons licenses arrangements that are available, and most publishers offer this these days. Even journals like the Journal of Advanced Nursing, which is not considered to be an open access pay-to-publish journal, offers that route, but there are other journals like Nursing Open, which I also edit, which are purely online open access and pay-to-publish. However, publishing open access in reputable journals can be expensive. It can cost several thousand pounds in some cases, and not everyone has access to that level of funding. One way that you can get access to those sort of funds is to build them into research grant proposals, if the grant awarding bodies and the charities allow that, and most of them do. Also, you can speak to your university and ask if they have funds available for you to publish open access. In some cases, with the Biomed Central journals, universities have subscriptions to these, and that enables staff in the universities to publish open access for free. And another way to get reduced fees is to do reviews for Biomed Central, and then they offer you a reduction in the open access article processing charge. However, all of these ways involve exchanging some money with the publisher to do it, and as I say, that can be quite expensive. Enter into this scenario the predatory publishers, who know how expensive it is and who know how keen people are on the first hand to get published and to publish open access, and these offer very cheap routes, often not charging very much at all, promising to peer review your article in a very short space of time and to make it open access. Sometimes the articles never appear, sometimes they do, but you must avoid the predatory publishers at all costs. These are not bona fide publishers, they're out to make money from you. And as I say, if you stay online at the end of this podcast, you'll hear another podcast about the specific topic of predatory publishers. Another way to make your work open access is to use what's called the green route. The route I've been describing there whereby you pay is called the gold route, but the green route is a route whereby you are allowed to put your article in a pre-publication state, in other words, the final accepted version of the manuscript that's been accepted by the publishers. You're allowed to make this available on, for example, a university repository, and most universities, and certainly in the UK with the advent of the next Research Excellence Framework, will have such repositories. However, you do have to be aware that there are embargo periods of 12 to 24 months, depending on what kind of journal you're publishing in, for people to get access to that manuscript. It doesn't mean to say that when it goes up straight away that they can get access to it immediately. And you do have to be aware that if you don't own the copyright for your article, either through an open access agreement or in some other way, then you're not allowed to put the final published version up on a repository. So that's the best advice I can give you. You either have to part with some money or do it by the green route, but still that does limit the access for a while to that article. And of course, the version that goes up there under the green route has to have a health warning with it, in as much as this is not the final edited and published version. That has to be stated. I've been asked about what advice I would give researchers in the early stages of their career, especially considering the rapidly competitive research publishing landscape. Well, the best advice I can give you is, at all costs, as I've said already, and you can hear more details about it at the end, is to avoid the predatory publishers. There are easy ways of doing this. Just don't be tempted. I think you've got to appreciate that research funding bodies, and the university funding bodies in the UK certainly, and in several countries across Europe, and I know this is also the case in Australia, are very keen on open access and insist that research which has been funded by particular research funding bodies is published open access. So it's something that you've got to understand and grasp, and I think the best thing that you can do as an early career researcher is to be fully aware of all the rules and regulations around open access, when it's needed, and what the limitations on it are, and what the different routes to open access publishing are. So learn about the requirements of the research funding bodies and the university funding bodies, and then see what they actually want. Are they expecting you to pay gold route, or are they allowing you to go green route? And then find out in detail what the routes are to gold route, if you can afford them. And remember, try to build money into your research grant proposals, or find out if there are funds available in your university or from any other source whereby you can publish gold route. Failing that, make yourself familiar with your local university repository and how to get papers up there. It's very important these days that all your output should be made available in some form on a university repository. So I think the best advice I can give you is to become fully familiar with all the rules and the regulations. They're not going to go away, and you are going to have to comply under certain circumstances with the requirements of funding bodies. Now, in the United Kingdom, which is where I am based, the Research Excellence Framework, which is the mechanism used by the Higher Education Funding Council for England and the equivalent bodies in the devolved governments across the United Kingdom, this is the mechanism for assessing research. And from the next exercise, which may take place around 2020, the requirement is that all publications which are entered into the REF for assessment have to be available open access. And very good information is available on the HEFCE website. All you have to do is Google REF open access requirements and you'll be taken straight to the document. There's a PDF and there are sets of slides there that you can look at. The requirements are quite simple. If an article's been accepted for publication after 1st of April 2016 and it is a journal article or a conference proceeding with an ISSN number, then that has to be made available open access. So anything published before 1st of April 2016 doesn't have to be available open access, only outputs accepted after that date. So that's the basic requirement. So we're now well into that period in the United Kingdom, so there's no choice. Anything that's accepted from this point on has to be published open access. The next rule is that the output must be deposited in an institutional or a subject repository within 3 months of being accepted for publication. During the first year of this policy, from the 1st of April 2016, a longer time frame does apply to some articles because it's realised that people will take some time to get up to speed with this. But most universities are insisting that outputs are up within the 3 months to make sure that people are used to this process as soon as possible. And what has to be deposited on the repository is the final peer-reviewed text as a minimum. However, if the final published version is published and is available gold access, then you would be expected to make that final published version available as well. And essentially, those are the requirements. Anybody has got to be able to discover the article using the internet. These haven't got to be closed repositories, they've got to be open to the general public, and you do have to pay attention to the different embargo periods. For medicine and science, panels A and B, as it were, on the REF, the embargo period maximum is 12 months. For other panels, C and D, humanities and social sciences, the embargo period is 24 months. These have been agreed, generally speaking, with the respective publishers in those areas. I've been asked here to talk a bit about my own work in relation to open access and the open access movement, and I'm addressing this in several ways. First of all, through my work with the Journal of Advanced Nursing, I'm at pains to point out to people that we do encourage open access, albeit at a cost, and that we do comply with the regulations which allow people to put papers up on repositories with an embargo period. However, I'm also working with another journal, Nursing Open, which was launched 3 years ago, and building this up as a reputable destination for articles to be published open access, online, and through a pay-to-publish route. In addition to that, I try to spread the word in various ways amongst my colleagues, but also at a sort of more general level through podcasts and YouTubes and conference presentations about the open access movement and some of the dangers and pitfalls with predatory publishers, predatory conferences, and also the concept of hijacked websites. Again, you'll hear about this at the end of the podcast. So I'm working very hard to try and encourage open access. I look at it from the perspective of an author. I very much want my work to be made available to as many people as possible. Of course, I also look at it from the perspective of an editor working with a publisher and realise that the industry can't survive unless people are actually paying to publish. These things don't happen for nothing. Just because something goes up online doesn't mean to say that it doesn't cost anything. So I think I've also got a responsibility to get across to people, academics on the whole, that the publishing industry does cost money and nothing is available for nothing, as it were. If we want good quality publications and good quality destinations, with all that that entails, peer review, good editing, and complying with the myriad regulations around ethics and authorship and all these things, then at some point this has to be funded. So either it's funded through the old model, whereby universities subscribe and make the content available free to people within the university, or people pay to put it up. One way or the other, money has to change hands at some point. University budgets, of course, are limited, and universities are always reviewing the journals they take, so it's quite likely in the years ahead that fewer and fewer journals will be taken by universities, and that more often people will be expected to publish open access. So I think that the open access movement is here to stay, and I think it's a very good thing, both from the perspective of an author and as an editor. So the next question is, what do I believe are the largest challenges facing open access? Well, the largest challenge facing open access is reputation. Many people assume simply because a journal is open access, online, pay to publish, that somehow it's dodgy, that it's somehow illicit and shouldn't be trusted, and that certainly isn't the case. So that's one of the big challenges. But the other big challenge, of course, is making the model sustainable through the gold route, because of restricted budgets, despite the fact that funding councils insist, and some of them do make money available for open access, likewise the charities that fund research. The funds are nevertheless very limited, and individuals can't be expected to pay the high levels of article processing charges. So the challenges on the one hand are reputation and ensuring that open access maintains a good reputation, that people are aware of where to publish reputably open access, but also enabling people to do so relatively economically without pricing individuals and journals completely out of the market. So there's a balance to be struck there. I'm not a business person and I don't deal with figures in this sort of way, but I guess the more open access there is and the more people are willing to pay for it, I'm guessing that the prices could well come down. But at the moment, to sustain the model, it is certainly a very expensive way to publish. Another message that I try to get across is that publishers are aware of double dipping and they do avoid it. So, for example, when we make an article available open access in the Journal of Advanced Nursing, we're not then just charging universities for it as well and getting money open access and getting money in subscriptions. What we try to do is to compensate by adding more articles to the journal, so that universities are getting roughly the same number of articles or pages in the journal that they would have paid for without those open access articles. Finally, I've been asked, how can the industry stakeholders combat these challenges and encourage open access? Well, I'm guessing the stakeholders are fourfold. There's the universities on the one hand, and then the people who work in them, so that's two stakeholders. Then there are the publishers, and then there are the research funders. I think that the more that open access is encouraged by funders and the more that universities realise this and make money available to the individuals who are obliged to publish open access these days, I think the better things will be, and this will encourage more open access. From the publisher's perspective, I think the best thing that publishers can do is, as quickly as possible, within the time frames that are allowed for these things, is to get their journals listed on the Directory of Open Access Journals, and to make absolutely sure that they're not published on the list of predatory publishers published by Geoffrey Beale, on the other hand. Next, to get the journals listed on Medline, and then finally to have the journals on the Thomson Reuters impact factor tables. And that certainly indicates that the journal meets certain criteria, like having an international editorial board and a bona fide review process. So I think possibly the biggest challenge is actually for the publishers to make sure that the reputation of open access journals is good, and that's as visible as possible, and that open access journals are up there alongside the more traditional publishing journals. This has certainly been achieved by the biomed journals, not all of them, but if it can be achieved by then there's no reason why journals like Nursing Open and other open access journals in our field can't be included by Thomson Reuters on the impact factor tables. So thank you very much for listening to that. As I say, if you stay online at the end of this podcast, then you will hear another podcast about predatory publishers. I'm Roger Watson, the Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing. Once again, thanks very much for listening. I hope you found this useful, and as ever, we're open to taking more questions or any comments, and these can be sent to the Journal of Advanced Nursing very easily at jan@wiley.com.
This podcast was produced in association with youpublicationslimited.com.
And now from the 13th of March, 2016. Hello, my name's Roger Watson, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing, and welcome to the JAN podcast. These occasional podcasts will be a miscellany of my reflections on working as an Editor-in-Chief, some hot topics in academic publishing, and occasional contributions from guest editors. This is the JAN podcast of 13th of March 2016. Are you plagued on a daily basis, often several times a day, by unsolicited emails asking you to either write for a journal, or to edit a special issue, or to join an editorial board, usually of a journal that you haven't heard about before? I know that these emails are effective because colleagues often come to ask me if they should submit something to that particular journal, or if they should take up the offer to join the board or edit a special issue. However, my advice invariably is no. My advice is no, because on the whole, these are predatory publishers. They're out to take your paper and also to take your money. Sometimes they won't publish it, but if they do, they will then own the copyright to it, and you've lost the opportunity to publish in a really prestigious, international, peer-reviewed journal. I should declare at this point that in addition to being the Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing, I'm also the editor of Nursing Open, which is an online pay-to-publish journal. So what's the difference between a journal like Nursing Open and other reputable online open-access pay-to-publish journals and these other journals which I've described as predatory publishers? Well, in a journal like the Journal of Advanced Nursing and Nursing Open, two things are common. All the manuscripts that are submitted to the journal undergo independent, peer-reviewed, double-blind process, which advises the editors on deficiencies in the papers, what changes may need to be made, and helps them to make decisions ultimately about which papers are accepted or rejected. Both the Journal of Advanced Nursing and Nursing Open, and many traditional journals like the Journal of Advanced Nursing and other reputable open-access online pay-to-publish journals like Nursing Open, also all offer this process of peer review. In fact, many journals like the Journal of Advanced Nursing, which would be seen as publishing by the traditional route, also offer a pay-to-publish open-access route. So I say once again, what is the difference between these journals and the so-called predatory publishers? There are two differences, and they're both quite glaring. One is that the predatory publishers will claim to review your paper, but they won't on the whole. If they do, the review system is usually quite cursory. The other difference is that the pay-to-publish aspect of reputable journals like the Journal of Advanced Nursing or Nursing Open, and of course other journals are available in this reputable band, separate the editorial and the payment process completely, and payment only takes place once the paper has been accepted. And getting your paper to the stage of acceptance is not contingent upon paying. It's only getting it published after it's been accepted that depends upon you paying the APC, or the article processing charge. In the predatory publishers, you'll note that you submit a fee along with the submission, and in fact getting your paper anywhere into that system is dependent on you paying that fee. Now, the fees for reputable open access pay to publish journals are quite high, ranging between $1,500 to $3,000 in some cases. On the other hand, the fees for these predatory publishing journals are relatively low. However, they work on the basis of volume. Believe me, all they're interested in is taking your money. They're not interested in your reputation, or even necessarily their reputation or academic standards at all. There are many ways in which you can spot predatory publishers. One of the best ways is to check the editorial board. Usually it's composed of people you haven't heard of. Sometimes it is composed of fairly eminent people, but sometimes these people don't know that their name is being used by that particular journal or by that particular publisher. The proof that some of them don't use a peer review process was demonstrated a few years ago when someone sent a paper with an obscene title, and that obscenity was repeated all the way through the paper right to the end, and the paper was published within a few days. Clearly nobody had even looked at the paper. In fact, to be quite frank, the people who processed the paper may not have even been able to understand what the meaning of the title or the obscenities within the paper were. So this is just a process for getting your money from you and appearing to give a good product, but that product can be very damaging to your career indeed. As I say, whatever the circumstances, the predatory publishers still hold the copyright, and it can be quite difficult to regain that copyright. So how do we protect ourselves against predatory publishers? Well, first of all, don't respond to unsolicited emails, especially from journals and from publishers that you know nothing about. I'm not going to name any particular predatory journals because I don't want to be taken to court by any that may happen not to be predatory or any that happen to be litigious. But on the other hand, I can point you to reputable publishers, and this is not an exhaustive list by any means. For example, Wiley, Elsevier, Sage, Springer, these all offer open access routes within their traditional journals, and also most of them offer, like Wiley offers Nursing Open, a specific open access pay-to-publish online journal. So make sure that you're going with a reputable publisher and with a journal that you actually know and you can't go wrong. And usually there is no need for these journals to be sending you unsolicited emails inviting you to edit, publish, or sit on the board. If you're being asked to edit a special edition, it should come from an editor you know. Likewise, if you're going to be invited to sit on the editorial board, it should come from a reputable publisher. I would strongly urge you simply to ignore every email you get from publishers that's unsolicited. This also goes for these unsolicited emails to attend conferences, usually in fairly exotic locations. Unless you actually know the organisation, or actually know the conference, or somebody who's going to it or been to it before, these should also be ignored. They're usually from some of the same people who run these predatory journals. They're just after your money. You turn up having paid your fee and your airfare and your hotel accommodation, just to find out that there's nobody there and no conference on. Just ignore them. So the first line of defence essentially is just to ignore these emails. However, there are positive and negative ways you can check. There is a list called the DOAJ, the Directory of Open Access Journals, and it's well worth checking this. If you check this, the journals that are on it and which have a green tick next to it have met certain standards that are required to be on the Directory of Open Access Journals. And in fact, my own journal, Nursing Open, is on there and has a green tick next to it. The green tick means that the journal has been established for a year and has actually published in that year and does have a peer review process and a proper editorial board. So that's the positive way of checking. If the journal's not on there, then you ought to be suspicious, especially if the journal doesn't appear to come from a reputable publisher. So that's an inclusive way to check. You can see if a journal's included on one of these lists, but the exclusive way, or the negative way, is to look on a list called Predatory Publishers, published in the States by Jeffrey Beale, very easy to find on Google. And there Jeffrey Beale gives an extensive list of journals and publishers that he considers to be predatory. You might be surprised by some of the journals that are on there, and certainly some journals have protested to say that they're not in fact predatory. However, one thing I can say without fear of contradiction is that none of the journals included in Jeffrey Beale's list are particularly prestigious. You wouldn't necessarily want to be publishing in these journals anyway. Jeffrey Beale also offers a list of organisations which purport to organise conferences, as I've just described, but of course these are also predatory. But one thing that Jeffrey Beale does give on his list, which is very interesting on the landing page, is the growth in the number of so-called predatory publishers from the tens about 4 years ago up to the something like 800 in the most recent count, and I'm sure by the time that this podcast is broadcast it'll be in the thousands. So this is a growing industry, and you've got to ask yourself why it's growing so quickly. Now, there's no doubt that some of these so-called predatory journals on Jeffrey Beale's list are in all good faith trying to do a good job. However, they're funding themselves on a very shaky business model, and I would worry about the sustainability of the online environments in which the papers are published, in other words, of the web pages where the papers are published. These will not be sustainable if these companies go bust, essentially. So your paper may well be published, the copyright may well belong to that company, and the website might disappear. And from what I hear, people still have difficulty in reclaiming the copyright. It's very difficult to reclaim the copyright from a company that doesn't exist. Now, there's a further twist to the tale of predatory journals, and it isn't quite the same as predatory journals, but I'm quite sure it's the same criminal intent that's behind it, and that is the hijacking of journal websites. It's quite complicated to explain how this happens. Sometimes completely fake websites are set up using very plausible-looking URLs, which look exactly like the web page of a journal that is reputable, and this guides people towards submitting their papers there. And unfortunately, the journals don't publish your paper, they just take your money. In other cases, these companies search about for old versions of company websites or journal websites and use them, because sometimes journals change the URLs, change the design of the websites, and move on to new domains, but leave old ones behind, and these can likewise be found and reactivated and hijacked. And it's all designed to make you submit your paper and send your money to the wrong place. So you do have to be careful. And the way you can protect yourself against this, of course, is to do independent searches for the journals. Again, if someone sends you a link with a purported journal in it and you click on that and it looks plausible, do an independent search on Google. If you're in any doubt at all, find out who the publisher is and contact them. Do check that you're submitting papers to the right place. So I'm not trying to frighten people off from submitting papers to journals or even considering authorship of academic papers. I just wanted to give a quick warning about the nature and existence of predatory publishers and some ideas for protecting yourself against them. Also related to that, predatory conferences. Essentially the same organisations, predatory publishers, predatory conference organisers are wanting to get your money from you without offering you anything substantial in return. And then I mentioned the hijacked journal websites, something else to be aware of. These are fake websites trying to get your manuscript and your money, and again offering you nothing in return. So the golden rules here are: don't respond to unsolicited emails. If in doubt, check it out using the Directory of Open Access Journals or Beale's List. If in doubt, beyond that, if you find what looks like a genuine website but you've got any doubts about it at all, try and find some independent way of verifying who the publishers are, who the editor of the journal is, and don't hesitate to make contact And of course, if you do see anything that looks like it's been hijacked or it's fake and it's being used in the name of a good journal which you trust, then do report it to that journal and they can take action to help prevent this criminal activity. I hope you found that useful. I'm sure that this will be updated in future as other scams in the academic publishing industry come to light. I'd value any comments or additions to this and any information that you do have about predatory publishers and hijacked websites at the Journal of Advanced Nursing at jan@wiley.com. That goes to the editorial office, but it will get to me. Thank you very much for listening.
This podcast was produced in association with youpublications.com.